And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Wednesday afternoon with plenty to do as we help you get over the hump and towards the weekend. Coming up, we have an NBA champion. What does it mean for all involved? Plus, Dabo Swinney, of course, anytime he talks, makes headlines. He had something to say yesterday at the Clemson Media Day that sparked quite the debate. We'll get to that coming up. Deion Sanders made a fool of himself. Greg Sankey clarified his forfeit comments. And which teams are best set up in the NFL for the next 3 years? All that and more over the next couple of hours. Plus, we'll talk some golf with Jeremy Schilling an hour from now. Scott Spratt from Football Outsiders will join us later on this hour as we creep closer to the NFL season. And Andrew Miller from the Post and Courier will join us later on this afternoon to talk about Chris Middleton, who, to my knowledge, became the second Charleston native to win an NBA championship. More on that coming up later on this afternoon as well. Plenty to do between now and 3. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted there, or you could take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go by simply streaming us online, charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Wednesday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
All right. This camel ride's going quite well. How about you?
Yeah, not too bad. Crowned an NBA champion last night. A lot of people are very happy. Bucks fans winning an NBA Finals for the first time in 50 years. Plenty of people here in the low country because Chris Middleton won his first ever NBA championship. It's a great story. We'll talk about that more in depth a little bit later on. But I don't know if anyone's happier than our own Bobby Harton as basketball comes to an end. We got plenty to do with the NBA Finals throughout the afternoon. We'll get to college football, some golf as well, the NFL. Plenty to do between now and 3. But let me start right there. The Bucks win the NBA championship last night. Were they the best team in the NBA this year? No, I don't think so. I don't think they were the best team in the East. In fact, it's funny in sports. Right, it's a game of inches. If Kevin Durant was an inch backwards and he makes that shot, it's a three for the win, and the Nets advance. Right, then we're having a whole different conversation here. Mike Budenholzer would be out of a job. We wouldn't be talking about Giannis as this star. Instead, we'd be talking about how he always comes up short. Chris Middleton always disappoints in the playoffs. Things would be very different. And the funny part is that Kevin Durant supposedly wears bigger shoes when he plays basketball. Bigger shoes than his actual shoe size. If he wore his actual shoe size, he would have been behind the three-point line, and the NBA playoffs would have been completely different. You could also make the case on the other side for Phoenix. Right? If it wasn't for all the injuries, they wouldn't be there. And we wouldn't have been talking about Chris Paul as a top-five point guard of all time. Were the Bucks the best team in the NBA this year? I don't think so. This time of year, they were. Throughout the course of the year, I wouldn't say so. But are they deserving of the NBA championship? Absolutely. For a few reasons. You know, the Bucks are like the final girl in a horror film. I'm a big horror film guy, and there's always this, it's a trope in the movies about the quote-unquote final girl. They've even made movies about it, and almost like parodies of the horror genre about the quote-unquote final girl, because every horror film has certain things. It's what the original Scream was based around. All the horror film tropes. When Jamie Kennedy was a big scary movie fan in that film, and throughout the movie it was like a self-aware horror film, he kept telling them all the rules of a horror movie, and that's one of them. right? The final girl that always makes it to the end. You don't see it coming. In the end of the movie, the last person standing is this little girl that was, you know, like very quiet, wasn't an athlete or anything. You didn't think that she would be the one that would last towards the end. Wasn't the jock, wasn't the beefcake, the cheerleader. No, they all got killed off early on. And in the end of the movie, you realize, like, wow, Neve Campbell is actually a badass. Didn't see that coming. Or I always love the movie Who's Next? It's another horror film. It's one of my favorites. And spoiler alert, the movie came out about a decade ago. But in the movie, it was about kind of like a home invasion type of deal, but it was a setup. They knew the family that was going to be there. The family had all sorts of money, so they were targeting them. And they never thought that the final girl in that film, the girl that made it to the end, they never thought she would be a threat. They thought she would be the easy one to take care of. Turns out she grew up on a survivalist camp in Australia because her father was one of those that thought, you know, terrible things would always happen in the world. And it prepared her for this moment. And she was the final girl. She took down these invaders and lasted till the end. And nobody saw it coming. That's the idea with the Bucks. They're like the final girl of the NBA playoffs. Going in, right? Nobody saw this. We thought it'd be Brooklyn. Oh, they're going to make it. Just like when you're watching that horror film, you think like, oh, that guy, right? He's going to make it to the end. He'll be able to handle this killer. And then they get knocked off. And the Lakers and the Clippers. And in the end, there's the Bucks standing there. And you realize, actually, we missed it. We didn't pay enough attention to them. We didn't realize how good they'd be in this scenario, how tough they are, how ballsy, whatever it is about that character in the horror film that makes it to the end, that Neve Campbell continues to survive until like the fifth Scream that they're coming out with this Halloween. And let me tell you, I'm excited for it. But that's besides the point. The Bucks were the final girl. They were left standing in the end, and you realize, like, wow, they really surprised me. I didn't think they would get here. But they showed us over the course of the film or playoffs what they were capable of. They erased three deficits along the way. They were down 2-0 to Brooklyn, beat them in their own building in Game 7. They were down 2-0 to the Suns, won four straight in the NBA Finals, including on the road, and beat them last night. They were able to get through injuries. Brooklyn couldn't. The Clippers couldn't. The Lakers couldn't. The Sixers couldn't. The Nuggets couldn't. Just about every other team could not. They lost DiVincenzo before the playoffs. Giannis had that injury, had to miss a couple of games. The Bucks still were the last one standing. Devin Booker, he played well in the NBA Finals. But if you go back and you look at his numbers, they dropped off after the broken nose, especially shooting-wise, and especially early on in the NBA Finals. Even Devin Booker wasn't quite the same, at least for a period of time, after the broken nose. Chris Paul, who knows what happened to Chris Paul? Was it fatigue? Was it the moment? Was it the matchup? Was it the COVID diagnosis? He got worse as the NBA Finals went along. Maybe that had something to do with the positive test for COVID. Who knows? The Suns struggled at times to handle the health situations they had on their side. The Bucks didn't. Giannis missed time. Milwaukee was still able to advance without him. Then he played in the NBA Finals with an injured knee. It was fantastic. And Milwaukee still found a way to win. Something needs to be said for that. Because not all teams could. Brooklyn couldn't. The Clippers couldn't, the Lakers couldn't, the Sixers couldn't, the Nuggets couldn't, but the Bucks did. And so they deserve credit. And Giannis, even playing with that injury, stepped up. You know, about 25 years ago, when Michael Jordan went to baseball, it presented us with the opportunity in the NBA to see, okay, who's the second best player in the league? We know Michael Jordan is the clear best. He's the best in the league. Now he's stepping aside. Let's find out who else is the best. And when Michael Jordan went to baseball, it presented an opportunity for Hakeem Olajuwon. And Olajuwon stepped up. And he won back-to-back NBA Finals while Jordan was gone. And you realize, like, oh, wow, Olajuwon is actually a lot better than we maybe give credit. And you realize, like, oh, wow, without Michael Jordan, Olajuwon could probably run this league. Things would be a little bit different in the NBA. Then Jordan came back. He won a bunch of championships. And that was the end for Hakeem Olajuwon's championship run. But you realized in that moment, when you take away Jordan, it was an opportunity to find out, okay, who is the next best? Hakeem answered that question. And this year, with all of these injuries, and LeBron taking an early exit, and Kawhi not being able to participate, and Kevin Durant, you know, losing to this very Milwaukee team, Giannis showed us along the way, okay, I'm the next great player. Right? While all these other guys stepped aside, and, you know, LeBron's towards the tail end of his career, Kawhi can't really be counted on. Durant is into his 30s, and, you know, he's had some health issues, and we realize Harden and Kyrie can't be counted on. Giannis stepped up and showed, yeah, just like Hakeem Olajuwon 25 years ago, I'm the next great player. Now, I wouldn't say he was or is the best player in the league. I saw that from many people in the last 12 hours. Speaking of self-aware right? Horror films. We're self-aware around here. We know what this industry is like. I talk about it all the time. People can be very hyperbolic, prisoner of the moments. We try to avoid that here. So I'm not going to come on today and tell you that Giannis is suddenly the best player in the league because I don't think that. I would still rather have Kevin Durant over Giannis. I think Kevin Durant is a better scorer, better. Even I know Giannis is a great defensive player. Durant does enough on defense. Give me Durant over Giannis. But I saw a lot of that reaction in the last 12 hours that, oh, this is Giannis. This is his league now. He's the best player in the league. I don't know if the Bucks win a championship in the next couple of years. I feel like this was kind of a one-off. Giannis was fantastic. Doesn't mean he's the best player in the league, but he was certainly the best player in this series. And he stepped up, and he played great, and the Bucks get the win, and it was good for the NBA as well for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's not a super team, right? They drafted Giannis. In fact, it's always funny. This is why I draft grades, right? And we do it a little bit around here, but I'm not really into the draft grades because you need to give it time to develop to see. We have no idea how things are going to work out. And so it's always funny to look back at such draft grades years afterwards and see, like, okay, what do they think at the time? Who nailed it? So looking back at what people said about Giannis, USA Today, when Giannis was drafted and Giannis went 14th overall in 2013 to the Bucks, USA Today said, Antetokounmpo has huge upside. He is 2 to 3 years away from coming to the NBA. The Bucks may have drafted him with the intent of keeping cap space open for free agency. But for a playoff team with big holes to fill, the choice seemed strange. Maybe being a little too nearsighted or farsighted. I always confuse the two. But looking at only the present and maybe not the future. ESPN at the time said it may be several years before we know whether the Bucks wasted the pick or struck gold. They'll spend millions for a player who is likely to play in the D League. But could the investment be worth it down the road? Yes. So they kind of get half credit. Was it worth it? Yeah, I would say today it's been worth it for Milwaukee. Not a lot of people saw it coming. He was seen as some sort of project. The Bucks developed him or helped develop him into the star that he is. Then they went out and they traded for Chris Middleton, who was a second-round draft pick out of Texas A&M. And he was playing in the G League. Right, first all-star to ever come from the G League. And he played a huge role in the NBA Finals throughout this series. And how did the Bucks get him? It was a throw-in for Brandon Jennings. Then they went out this year and they signed Drew Holiday, which was seen as like a big move. It's not a James Harden, Kyrie Irving move, but it was seen as a big move. And Drew Holiday, we played the clip earlier this week where Chris Middleton 3 years ago called him the most underrated player in the league, but he was kind of the missing piece, at least defensively. Wasn't great offensively for most of the playoffs, but played a huge role defensively, shutting down Chris Paul, helping on Devin Booker throughout the series, doing a great job on the Suns' guards. Played a big difference as this series unfolded. And they went out and they signed him. And again, it wasn't some sort of blockbuster. It wasn't some sort of huge move like, oh my goodness, James Harden or Kyrie Irving or Paul George or Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis, these other guys. But it was another nice move. You bring in Mike Budenholzer, you develop this team, and you do it kind of organically. And that trio speaks to Milwaukee's ability. Right? That's why they deserve even more credit for winning this championship. Because if you say a team benefited from a bunch of injuries or breaks, and then they also have Kevin Durant and James Harden and Kyrie Irving, you take a great team and give them even more breaks, it's like, oh, geez, do they need any more help? But for Milwaukee, while they do have Giannis, right around him, it's not like he has some other Hall of Famer or All-Star talent really playing with him. And so it speaks to Milwaukee's ability to be able to get it done without that super team. That's why they deserve more credit. They built a great little trio there. Is it truly a big three? I don't think so. But you have a star in Giannis. You have Chris Middleton, who's clutch. He's the clutch player of the three. And you have Drew Holiday, who's the defensive player of the three. Right, they all bring something different to the table. And they showed, or this series showed, that the NBA is not dependent on super teams and traditional powers. We had the Bucks against the Suns in the NBA Finals. You had Chris Paul against Giannis, two guys who, for years, couldn't get over the playoff hump. You had two suffering cities, and yet it gave us, really, a great series. Would have been even better if it went 7 games, but we got a 6-game series where, really, all 6 games were highly competitive and entertaining and fun to watch. And the other reason why this series was good for the NBA, other than giving hope to all those other small markets and showing, hey, we don't need only super teams. You can win without a super team. But the other reason why it is good for the league is because the Bucks are kind of anti-analytics. Maybe not intentionally, but they're not the prototypical analytical team. Their star is not an outside shooter. He's the worst shooting finals MVP we've had since Shaq almost 20 years ago. Now, Giannis can't shoot it well from beyond the arc. Not a great foul shooter, although he performed well, especially last night and as the playoffs went on. But it was good for the NBA to get that out there, because I think it's better for the product when we go move away from strictly all threes. I get what the numbers say, but I don't think it's the best thing for the product or for the league, for the development, for even some of the stars in the league. And Giannis showed, hey, you could still be a great player, you could still win big without just simply shooting threes all the time. The last three NBA champions were all outside the top 10 in three-point attempts. And this year specifically, the seven top teams in the NBA for three-point attempts this year combined to win one total playoff series. So it was a good postseason for the anti-analytics crowd, for the crowd that tells you you don't need to just shoot threes. You can still win by scoring in other ways. The Bucks showed that, and a lot of teams showed that in the playoffs. And it was good for the NBA to see a team like Milwaukee pull this off. It could help the league moving forward. It was obviously great for that suffering city. It was great for Giannis and Charleston's own Chris Middleton. It was good for the league. I think it was a good series for fans. I think it was good for the fans of a lot of these smaller market teams or teams that aren't traditional powers to show, hey, you have a chance too. We had the Raptors 2 years ago. Now the Bucks this year, it's not just about the Lakers, the Celtics, right? The Warriors for a while, the same old teams. We're getting some new blood in there. I think it's good. Now, we know the NBA is a star league, and you're only going to go the way of your stars. So when we come back, what did this outcome mean for the stars involved? For somebody like Giannis, somebody like Chris Paul, as the Bucks win the NBA championship last night, their first in 50 years. We'll get to that coming up. We'll talk some NFL in a little bit as well, and plenty of college football throughout the afternoon. It's the Mar Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champions. What does it mean for the stars involved? Because we know the NBA is a star-driven league. Chris Middleton, Charleston's own, with an NBA championship now. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. Andrew Miller from the Charleston Post and Courier will join us later on this afternoon and talk about Chris Middleton with really a remarkable story. That's the great thing about the Bucks. Kind of what I touched on in the open. I mean, Giannis comes in from another country. Nobody thought a whole lot of him at the time. He develops himself into an MVP. Chris Middleton gets drafted in the second round. Nobody at the time, outside of Charleston, really thought or knew much about him. Was injured at Texas A&M, gets drafted second round, goes to the G League, throw in a trade. He averages like 6 points per game his first year. He's just, you know, just a guy at that point. Turns himself into an all-star, now playing big in the NBA Finals. It's what you can appreciate about the Milwaukee Bucks. Fans are crazy about the team. They built it up organically. Instead of just going out and signing Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant and trading for James Harden in a big city like Brooklyn, where, you know, New York sports in general have plenty of championships over the years, you can appreciate what Milwaukee has done to get to this point. Now, we know the NBA is a star-driven league, and you're only going to go the way of your star, much like the way of your star starting pitcher or your quarterback. If your quarterback's not good enough, you're not going to be good enough. Or if he's struggling, you're going to struggle. Right, if your ace pitcher is struggling that day, you're in trouble. If he's a stud on the mound, okay, you're going to like your chances. And so in this series, Giannis was great. The Bucks win the series. Chris Paul on the other side was lousy for the majority of the series, and the Suns lose the series. Now, for Giannis, all sorts of records along the way. Right, he scored over 50 points. He was fantastic last night. He wanted to finish that thing off, and he did. Scored over 50 points, the last two to do that in an NBA Finals game, LeBron and Michael Jordan. Now Giannis, pretty good company to keep. He's the youngest to be a Finals MVP, a regular season MVP, and a Defensive Player of the Year. Giannis and Shaq are the only players now with three separate 40 and 10 games in the same NBA Finals. Giannis is one of just 9 players to have an NBA Finals MVP and multiple regular season MVPs, and he's only 26. And with that, he joins the company of Moses Malone, Magic Johnson, Tim Duncan, Larry Bird, LeBron James, Wilt Chamberlain, Michael Jordan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Pretty elite company. And maybe the most impressive thing about it all is that Giannis has done this without a star. LeBron has always had that co-pilot, for the most part. All right, what LeBron did a couple years ago down 3-1, wildly impressive. Kyrie was a big help. For the most part, throughout LeBron's career, when he's won, he's had that co-pilot with him. Jordan had Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen wasn't on Jordan's level. He wasn't even on Dwayne Wade's level. But you had another, you know, a Hall of Fame talent. Bird with Boston had plenty of talent around him. Magic always had plenty of talent around him. Giannis didn't have that other star. Chris Middleton played well. Drew Holiday was very good defensively, but he didn't have a Scottie Pippen. He didn't have a Kyrie Irving or a Dwayne Wade or a Klay Thompson or pick your poison, Steph Curry or Kevin Durant. One was the star, the other was the co-pilot. And they were so good that it was hard to differentiate between the two. He didn't have that here. Giannis did all of that. He puts his name on the level playing field, in the same categories, these other legends, and did so really without any other true star on that team. And I think it also shows patience, that we need patience as we try to break down these players in the NBA or in all sports. I always think back to the Louis C.K. bit where he talks about technology. We've been so spoiled by technology. And he tells, it's a comedy routine that he does about how he's on a plane. And the guy is all upset that the internet is not working for a few minutes on the plane. Or when you get upset with your cell phone. Right, like your phone is lagging behind. It's moving slowly, or it can't complete the call at the moment. It's taking a little while. You ever do that? You try to call somebody, and it doesn't dial right away. You have to wait a moment. Like, what's going on? Why? And Louis C.K. does the whole bit. Right? Can you give it a second? It's sending signal up to up to space, coming back down. It's allowing you to talk through that little square in your hand to somebody on the other side of the world perfectly clearly. Just give it a second. It's a great technology. It's amazing it even works. And you're upset that it's taken a few seconds to place that call? Just give it a second. And it's similar with these NBA stars. I mean, Giannis still is only 26. We were giving him a hard time, myself included, about his shortcomings in the postseason. He's only 26 years old. Sure, he's been in the league now for, you know, he was drafted 8 years ago. Came over as a young guy, but came from a different country. Young player. A lot of teams didn't think much of him. Turned himself into this star. And at 26 years old, multiple MVPs, Defensive Player of the Year. He's already had a Hall of Fame career at 26. Look at other stars in the NBA. Steph Curry didn't get his first NBA Finals until he was 27. Same with LeBron James. Michael Jordan was 28 when he won for the first time. Isaiah Thomas, 28. Shaq, 28. Kevin Durant, 28. Wilt Chamberlain was 30 when he first won. Hakeem Olajuwon was 31 when he won his first NBA championship. Can we give it a little time? And on the flip side with Chris Paul, Chris Paul now holds the record for most series lost after leading 2-0. He has blown 4 series in the playoffs when leading 2-0. He's done it now in the NBA Finals, in the Conference Finals, in the second round, each of the last 3 decades. You go the way of your star. And for Chris Paul, Phoenix went the way of CP3, blowing another series. He's lost 8 series in his playoff career when leading. This is just what he is, who he is. Right? The old line, people tell you who they are. Believe them. This is why we have resumes. And when you look at Chris Paul's resume, we shouldn't have expected anything different or been surprised. This is what the resume tells you. Great player, does improve teams when it comes time to the playoffs, can't finish off series. This was another instance. Only player to blow 4 2-0 leads. Blake Griffin's the only other guy with 3 of those, but 2 of the 3 were when he was teammates with Chris Paul. Paul has been one of the best or worst, depending on how you look at it, at blowing series that we've seen in NBA playoff history. And that should be a knock on his resume or legacy. Here was Giannis after the game. He had a great press conference. He was telling stories about Kobe, how Kobe believed in him, and that gave him real confidence about how this should help others throughout the world. Growing up kids in Africa and all these other countries he was mentioning, that you can accomplish whatever you believe in. Because Giannis came from nothing in Greece, turned himself into a star in the NBA here in this country. But this soundbite in particular was about Giannis staying in Milwaukee and getting this done with the Bucks.
You know, obviously, I wanted to get the job done. you know. But that's my stubborn side. Like, it's easy to go somewhere and go and win a championship with somebody else. It's easy. I could go, I don't want to put anybody in the spot, but I could go to a super team and, you know, just do my part and win a championship, still won. But this is the hard way to do it, and this is the way. And we did it. We did it, man.
Jim on the front right.
And that sound at the end was Giannis kissing the trophy. Congrats to him and the Bucks, and he stayed local, did it, right? Didn't have to go build a super team, and the Bucks are champions today. Hey, the NFL season is right around the corner. We'll come back with Scott Spratt from Football Outsiders. We'll preview the NFL season coming up when we return. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
The night was clear and the moon was yellow and the leaves came tumbling down.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. The Milwaukee Bucks, NBA champions for the first time in 50 years. And when basketball comes to an end, it's another sign that football's right around the corner. Another sign that, well, football's right around the corner is the release of the yearly Football Outsiders Almanac. And it's available now. Head on over online. You can purchase it online. Head on over to footballoutsiders.com. And get some of the best reading material you can find for the upcoming football season. I got mine. I've already been perusing it, getting ready for the NFL season. And joining us now to talk about a little bit of everything for the upcoming NFL year is Scott Spratt from Football Outsiders. Follow him on Twitter at Scott_Spratt. Scott, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Luke. I'm good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate the time. I want to go all over the league, all over the dial with you while we have you. Let's start with what's been the number one story of late, though, with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And I'll just simply ask you, do you think we see Rodgers in a Packers uniform? And if so, you know, how many games do you think? Do you think we see him week one, middle of the season, or he holds out completely? What are your thoughts on Rodgers this year?
I mean, I'm just probably reading the tea leaves like anyone else, but my suspicion would be that Rodgers would want to come back and play. I think, you know, my outsider's perspective is that he probably is most interested in winning that second Super Bowl. So my bet would be on him coming, kind of doing it for the teammates more than anything. I know that he's frustrated with the front office, but my guess is he's going to play this year.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. If it's about trying to be in the best place to win, it's hard to make a case, I imagine, for other teams over Green Bay where they've gone 13-3 the last 2 years, NFC title games. When you look at the Packers this year, assuming Rodgers is under center, you know, do you think they stand as good of a chance this year as years past to try to win the Super Bowl?
I really do. I mean, in the past, it seems like people have been hung up on the fact that maybe they didn't add a second receiver next to Devontae Adams. But in terms of supporting talent overall, including defense, including quality run blocking and pass blocking and everything, the Packers have really been one of the best teams in the league to support Aaron Rodgers. So I think if all you're caring about is trying to win and give yourself the best chance to win, the Packers are a really good choice. Now, that being said, we probably didn't expect the Buccaneers to be a great choice for Tom Brady the year before, but sometimes you can kind of predict these things going forward a little bit. So it wouldn't shock me if Rodgers was looking around the league and maybe eyeing some of the teams with younger talent, maybe a team that doesn't look as good because they haven't had good quarterback play, you know, Denver being the obvious answer there. But I think there are other places where he could have success too, but the Packers would be a great choice just in terms of on the field.
Yeah, you mentioned Denver, so this is kind of a Rodgers question, but it's also about the league itself. Which team or teams do you look at and you say, man, they have everything else. If they could just get the right quarterback, they could be really special. What are a couple of those teams or a team that you see like that this year?
So if we're moving beyond Denver, you know, I mean, the Carolina Panthers may be a really good option there. I guess we'll have to wait and see what we get from Sam Darnold. Football Outsiders really hasn't loved what he's done so far in his career from an efficiency perspective, but we've seen that thing change more recently than we had in the past. The obvious example, I think, being Ryan Tannehill, coming from Adam Gase, who was the same coach as here with Darnold, but when he got into a new scheme that was more play-action focused under Arthur Smith in Tennessee, that really kind of unlocked his skill set. And I'm hopeful that for Carolina, maybe they can have Joe Brady come up with some things that better suit Darnold's skill set and maybe give him a chance to break out in a way that few players have that haven't had success for the first few years of their career.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the Panthers. I've been saying all offseason, I liked that move bringing in Darnold. I think he'll be better in Carolina. I don't know if he's going to be a Pro Bowl talent at any point, but I think he'll be improved. But when you look at Darnold, it's hard to judge his time in New York because of his surroundings. So for you, when you look at Sam, you know, how much of some of his struggles in New York do you believe were on him or just simply on the team and maybe lack of talent around him in New York?
Yeah, honestly, I think it probably is a mixture of both. I mean, you can look at the physical skills, the arm strength, everything like that. He really has all of the tools that you would need to succeed as a passer. But there are still some worrying signs with his actual on-field production. It's like in situations, it's not just when he's getting rushed. Even in clean pocket situations, he's performed really badly in our metrics. But I think there may be a situation here where there's some sort of, you know, like when you're getting hurried all the time, I think it can kind of mess you up even when you're in a clean pocket situation. Like as Sam Darnold would say, maybe he's hearing ghosts or seeing ghosts out there. So I think maybe if everything is a little bit more stable in Carolina, it may end up working out for him in all situations. So I'm optimistic.
What's the ceiling for the Panthers this year? Say Darnold does take a step forward and plays really well. What could you see this Carolina team accomplishing with competent quarterback play?
Fringe playoff contender is probably where I'd put them. I actually am a little more optimistic for the defense than our almanac would suggest. It's really hard to predict defense from year to year. Offense is much more consistent, so you're kind of hanging a lot of this on Darnold. But there's so much young defensive talent in Carolina that I think it wouldn't shock me if they had a Washington football team type of leap this year defensively. So if suddenly Brian Burns is leading the league in sacks and maybe you're getting some really good defensive tackle play from the new guys, yeah, J.C. Horn, there was really some weaknesses in the secondary for the team the last few years. I could see them turning a corner majorly defensively that would maybe prop them up to, 9 or 10 wins in now a 17-game season.
You drew the comparison to Washington. Let me put you on the spot. What would the Panthers need from Sam Darnold? Because, Alex Smith last year, he just took care of the football. He didn't do a whole lot, and Washington was able to win and get to the playoffs. So when you look at Sam Darnold, what would he need to do personally or play like a different, what quarterback would he have to perform like in order to turn this Carolina team with their other weapons into a playoff team this year?
I mean, I'd love for Darnold to not try to do too much. Like, I know he's got tremendous arm strength and he's going to be eager to, rekindle the connection to Robbie Anderson down the field. But the Panthers have so many receiving options that can really succeed after the catch. So if he's just kind of willing to take the medicine and dump it off to Christian McCaffrey from time to time, he doesn't really need to, get everything on every play. Just make some of those smart decisions, avoid the bigger mistakes that I think could submarine the team. I think that would be a really great way to progress. Do less, but sort of achieve more as a team.
Talking with Scott Spratt from Football Outsiders. You can get their almanac today online, footballoutsiders.com, to get ready for the upcoming season. One of the best things you could read for the upcoming year. The other local team around here, the Atlanta Falcons. Same division, of course, NFC South. The Falcons this offseason kind of had their hands tied. It seemed like they were riding the fence. They have to get rid of Julio, but still committing long-term to Matt Ryan. So when you look at this Falcons team, where do you see them going here in year one of Arthur Smith? Are they still ready to compete this year? Are they kind of rebuilding? What do you expect from the Falcons?
I think you kind of hit it on the head there, Luke. I mean, I think they didn't properly choose the lane that they should be in. And now some of this, they were hamstrung by moves they'd made, in the previous front office and coaching staff. But by trading away Julio Jones, I think that's something that's going to really majorly affect their chances to compete in the short term. But they didn't move off of Matt Ryan. And even if they couldn't, they could have drafted somebody like a Justin Fields potentially to really kind of embrace a rebuild. It's possible that they'll rebound. I know Football Outsiders is kind of big on the fact that they lost a lot of games by, fewer than 7 or fewer than even 3 points. So those type of luck factors tend to even out. But I'd have a really hard time seeing this team losing talent like Julio Jones suddenly leaping back into like 11 or 12 wins, which would make them like a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I think, again, this may be a ceiling of a fringe playoff team, but, is that going to help the team get Super Bowl ready in 2 or 3 years? I don't know. I think it would have been better if they had kind of embraced a rebuild a little bit more than they did.
I agree with you there, but I did like the coaching changes. I think the Falcons will be improved just by the moves they made with the staff, and as you mentioned, those losses, fair or otherwise, I tie them to Dan Quinn. Now you bring in Arthur Smith. I love Dean Pease as a defensive coordinator. What do you expect out of this coaching staff? We've never seen Arthur as a head coach. He's still a relatively young guy. What do you expect from the coaches now with this staff in Atlanta?
I mean, I really couldn't be any higher on Arthur Smith. I thought that he did a tremendous job of highlighting Ryan Tannehill's strengths and avoiding his weaknesses back in Tennessee. So you love that fit. But the problem is the Falcons have been pretty consistently excellent offensively. through the last few regimes, honestly. That was never really the problem under Dan Quinn. It was odd considering his defensive background, but their problems have tended to come on defense. And I really haven't seen much additions in defensive talent. Again, they've been hamstrung by, you know, some of the finances that they've had to deal with, the salary cap issues, but I'd be hard-pressed to see them sort of suddenly jumping up and being a top-10 defensive team. So it's all going to be on guys like Matt Ryan and maybe hoping that Kyle Pitts really can be the best tight end that many scouts consider him to be as a prospect.
What's the hierarchy in that division? I assume that you like the Bucs still as the best team in that division after what they just did last year and the fact that they're bringing everyone back. Are the Saints the second-best team? Could we see somebody like the Falcons or Panthers sneak into that second spot? How do you see that division stacking up?
It's actually unusual. We have the Bucs projected for more wins than everybody, you know, including the Chiefs, including the Ravens, and it's pretty substantial. And it's both a combination of their talent and the fact that they have one of the easier schedules in the league. So, you know, Tom Brady getting another good path here is probably enjoying that. But one thing I'll point out is that the Buccaneers last year were one of the luckiest teams from a health perspective. They suffered the fewest adjusted games lost of any team. So if they start seeing some injuries, that could really challenge depth that didn't get challenged last year. And that's really when the other teams would have a chance. We do love the Saints. The Saints are a really strong defensive team, which is something that you know, I would say a lot of the public has kind of missed out on, as the offense under Sean Payton has always been such a huge hot-button issue. But even transitioning to a new quarterback, whichever one it is, I think defensively they can probably maintain their relevance and are probably my choice to be the number two team in the league, in the division this season. But I think that really the Falcons would have a chance at the playoffs, and if Darnold, you know, was good, I think they would have a chance too. I think we're probably talking more like fringe wild card, but I think every team in the division would have a playoff hope.
Talking with Scott Spratt from Football Outsiders. Before we let you go, let me end with a couple of general questions. Give me a team that you think will be better than most people seem to think. One team that maybe is being a little underrated right now as we get ready for the 2021 season.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much of this is an echo chamber, but I've heard a lot of pessimism about the Pittsburgh Steelers, and most of it's centered on Ben Roethlisberger and the passing game, and it really couldn't have ended any worse at the end of last year than it did, obviously. It was kind of an embarrassing playoff loss, and he looked kind of cooked. But what I'll say is that, one, they have one of the best defenses in the league. We're projecting them to be the best by DVOA standards on defense. And to me, that makes it a little bit easier for Roethlisberger, even if he doesn't have the downfield passing game that he did in his prime. He can kind of dump it off to some really talented players like your Deontay Johnson types that can really excel after the catch. So I think Roethlisberger isn't going to have to be that good for the Steelers to be a real playoff contender. So I think the Steelers would be my choice as a team that maybe people are sleeping on a little bit too much by the way their season ended last year.
And then on the flip side, give me a team that you think people are propping up a little too much, that you think may take a step back or they're just overrated right now. What's a team you're not as high on for the 2021 season?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a mixed mind about this, but the big answer from a Football Outsiders numbers perspective is the L.A. Chargers. Now, I couldn't be more enamored with Justin Herbert as a quarterback prospect, but it is true when a quarterback has that good of a rookie year, which is very unusual, it's less likely that he's going to make the type of jump that you often see with a year two quarterback. You know, quarterbacks make the biggest jump from their rookie years to their second years in the league, but Herbert was already so good that it's going to make it really difficult for them to improve from there. And then beyond that, I think there's a lot of questions on, you know, the defense and special teams, the areas that don't get talked about as much as offense. It could maybe hold the team back. Plus, you're playing in a really loaded division, obviously, with the Chiefs. You know, we've mentioned that the Broncos defense is really good. If they somehow got Aaron Rodgers, that would be transformative. But the Raiders, too. It's just going to be a really tough road for the Chargers to, I think, ascend the way that we think they might if Herbert is really like an all-time type of quarterback.
It's July 21st. Scott, the people want to know, what would be your Super Bowl pick today? Who do you like? You know, because Vegas has the best odds for the best matchup as the Bucs-Chiefs. I find it hard to believe we'll get a rematch. Who do you like as we sit here in July for this year's Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's reasonable that those two teams are the betting favorites. But if you're looking for somebody that's a little bit off of radars, I would look at the Baltimore Ravens as a really good choice. Now, they've had obvious offensive limitations with Lamar Jackson at quarterback, but I think they've done a really good job of adding talent that I think better fits with his skill sets. Rashad Bateman, the round one wide receiver, I think is going to be a great fit, kind of working routes like slants toward the middle of the field where Jackson is very comfortable making accurate throws. I think that could be a team that really makes a little bit of a jump forward when maybe people aren't expecting it.
And last one before we let you go, Scott. Expectations year one for Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer in Jacksonville this year.
So we have a prospect scout on staff at Football Outsiders, and he thinks Lawrence is the best quarterback prospect in at least a decade. So I know that it's been a bit of a rocky start to Urban Meyer's tenure in the NFL, but I think that Lawrence is so good and that they actually have some sneaky good offensive talent that I think that it's really going to raise the floor of this team beyond what people are expecting. So it's still a really bad defense, still a really young team, but I would absolutely expect 6 or 7 wins at a minimum. I just think Lawrence is going to hit the ground running in the NFL.
He's Scott Spratt from Football Outsiders. Follow him on Twitter at Scott_Spratt. Also a fantasy football writer, so we can help you there. And head on over to footballoutsiders.com today to get your almanac for the 2021 season. They do an incredible job with all the numbers, the data, the breakdown, to get you ready for the upcoming year. Scott, appreciate all the time. Great insight. It was great chatting with you. And, hey, enjoy the upcoming season.
Thanks so much. Happy New Year.
Yeah. Well, we will. Appreciate it. Scott Spratt from Football Outsiders. There's a few things that I read every year. I always get the Phil Steele. That's my go-to for college football. And for the NFL, I got two. Football Outsiders, and they're kind enough. They send me one. Right, hey, it's nice to be in the media. They send me their almanac. And then Warren Sharp, who's very analytical, and he puts together a book of analytics for the upcoming football season every year. So, if you love numbers, if you like to do that preseason reading to get ready for the upcoming year, those are at least the two I'm always interested in. Warren Sharp's book, you can find that online, and Football Outsiders. They do a great job over there. And Scott Spratt, appreciate him joining us to break it all down leading up to the upcoming NFL season. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. Something he said stood out to me about those Carolina Panthers. Really interesting. We'll get to that when we come back as we wrap up hour one. It's the Mauro Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Mauro Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour one here on the Mauro Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll talk some golf coming up in about 10 minutes with Jeremy Schilling. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Scott Spratt of Football Outsiders. Get their almanac today at footballoutsiders.com. Always enjoy talking with the folks from over there. And there's something he mentioned in our conversation last segment that stood out that I found interesting. We were talking about the Carolina Panthers. What's their ceiling this year? And he thinks that the Panthers could be a fringe playoff team if Sam Darnold plays well enough. He referenced the Panthers as a team that is just a quarterback away. He feels like they have the other pieces. And he even compared them to the Washington football team from a year ago. Now, granted, the Washington football team a year ago was, they were only 7-9. They made the playoffs because it was a lousy division. Most years, that team's not going to the playoffs, almost every other year, in fact. But they were led by their defense and a quarterback in Alex Smith who just didn't have to do too much. I mean, Smith had more interceptions than touchdowns last year, but they went 5-1 when he started. They were 2-8 when he didn't. And the alternative, other than Alex Smith, was Dwayne Haskins, who was lousy, didn't take care of the football. Kyle Allen also played last year, same idea. But Alex Smith was the safe quarterback. Just go out there, don't turn it over. Right, keep us on track, dump it off to the running back, don't hold on to it too long. You got that terrible leg injury, we don't want you in the pocket, we don't want you running around. They wanted a quarterback, or needed a quarterback, to do as little as possible. And so while Washington was only 7-9 last year, again, when Alex Smith played, they were 5-1. Turnover margin was much better when Smith was the quarterback. Because you know the defense is going to do its job. Washington's defense last year was top three in the league. We just need a quarterback that's not going to screw it up. And so the comparisons to Washington are interesting because if you believe Carolina could be on a similar track this year, then what do you need out of Sam Darnold? Maybe not a whole lot. Just don't screw it up. Now, you could tell me that's what Teddy Bridgewater was last year, right? Bridgewater is that safe quarterback, doesn't take chances, doesn't throw it downfield. He won't turn the football over too much. He's a safe option. And how come that wasn't enough to win last year? The Panthers struggled, and they lost a bunch of close games because of the quarterback. Well, maybe the defense will be better this year. Will it be as good as Washington? No. But I thought the comparison to Washington was interesting. Maybe it tells us that the Panthers don't need a whole lot from Darnold. He just needs to be better than New York, but he doesn't need to be that great for this team to potentially become a playoff squad. We'll find out. I like the move to get Sam Darnold, though, and I think he'll be better in Carolina. Jeremy Schilling joins us next. We talk golf. Hour 2 coming up. It's the Moore Midday Show on ESPN Radio.